So Jason Celino, analyst that covers Procore, welcome to our technology summit. Welcome to the afternoon session. With me today is Howard Fu, the CFO of Procore. So maybe I'll just kick it off with a warm-up, if you want to think about it that way. So macro, in terms of like questions and topics, I'm sure it comes up every meeting frequently. So I guess, what is your current view of just construction project activity? And then if you can go a little deeper, like what are your owners saying versus what are your GCs and subs saying?
They're really, I mean, I wish we had more to say and more to tell, but there really not a lot has changed in terms of our customer sentiment, and that's across all three stakeholders, in terms of the cautiousness that they feel in the current environment. And so not a lot has changed. Everyone's waiting for some level of range-bound stability, regardless of whatever indicator that you're looking at, and so folks are still cautious. Folks are still also generally as optimistic as they ever were about the long-term opportunity in the industry. And so that's why we keep saying nothing has really changed about what the way that we are engaging from an economic standpoint or macro standpoint with our customers. And we just control what we can control.
Okay. So this week, you know, my new favorite word starts with a T, tariffs. So I know it's a very fluid situation. Announcements are being put out, they're being retracted, so who knows? But aside from the announcements themselves, like what do you track to keep an eye on things, health, you know, whether it's becoming an issue, whether it's not, but maybe give us a step into how you think about it.
I mean, what we track is probably the same things that you all actually track, in addition to some of the information that we get just from our daily engagements with our customers, getting a sense of what they're talking about, what they're thinking about, and we've already talked about their sentiment already. But let me just, some of you in this room have probably had one-on-one meetings with us already, and I'll just step back a little bit and just kind of provide context here. You know, tariffs going up. Oh man, this is going to hurt y'all. Oh, they just canceled the tariffs. It's on pause. Must be fantastic for you all. You know, interest rates are going up. Oh, your business is going down the tubes. Oh, interest rates come down. You must be doing great. Commercial sucks. And then, oh, you know, hey, data centers are great. So you guys must be going fantastic. Like all of these things, when we talk to our customers, they just don't make those types of decisions that way in such a rash and whipsaw kind of way. And particularly the larger players in the industry have been around a long time, have been through a lot of these things. That's why they're still more optimistic about the long-term opportunity, and they're cautious in the short term, and they're waiting for it to see how things shake out. But, you know, what we look at are the same things that you all look at, and we pay very close attention to how our customers are feeling, and that's through our daily interactions of our field organization and obviously with exec reach outs as well.
Okay. So is there any like economic data that you look at? I mean, someone was mentioning that maybe some of the census data might have come out recently that might have changed or anything, but anything along those lines?
Sure. But look, again, it's similar to kind of the example in the pitch that I just gave, right? Shifts in those, it doesn't cause us to make any shifts in terms of how we're executing against operationally what we're trying to achieve, what we're trying to accomplish for our customers. Those are certain data points, certainly data points that we consider: census, backlogs, ABI, Dodge, all those different things. We look at all of those things. But no one, and even in the collection of those things, it doesn't swing us either way because you have to believe in the opportunity that's out there for the industry itself and how under-digitized the industry is. And you have to believe the way that Procore is approaching it from a platform perspective and solutions that sit on that platform is the right way to digitize the industry and help the industry.
Okay. So I would probably categorize all those questions probably in things you can't control, so the things that you can. So if we think about your go-to-market changes, your transition, where are we in terms of inning there? Like what are the stages that we should think about? Let me just start there.
Yeah, so remember, we communicated this extremely early, 6 months early, before anything even went into place. Somebody asked me this actually a couple of days ago, and instead of an inning that we're in, I think we're just coming out of spring training, right? Because all these things that we did, typically you don't tell a field organization what's going to happen in the new year because you want everyone to focus on closing out the year. But we knew that this was the right thing to do, and so what did we do? We did a lot of communication. We did a lot of enablement. We hired key leaders so that they were bought into where we were going and then cascading that down. And so the reason I say we're just coming out of spring training is we just started to put all these things in place on Jan 1, and we just finished our last sales kickoff. The sales kickoffs were on a regional basis probably a couple of weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago. And the energy was tremendous. We hadn't gotten together physically for a sales kickoff in many years. But the piece that I've been telling people that I'm probably just as equally excited about is some of these classroom aspects is where the rubber meets the road. You're getting your comp plans, you're getting your territories, you're understanding who you're working with, the new solution specialist and the product specialist. You're doing workshops on these account plans. All of those things have actually been going really well as well. And the feedback from the leaders all the way down to the field on the street level has been actually really good. You couple that with getting folks together and the energy and the momentum, I think that's a huge positive. Now, having said that, I have to say this because it's true. We are now only in the beginning of really the true transitions and the changes that are happening in Q1. And so there's a lot of wood to chop, but so far it's going pretty much as expected.
Okay, well, that's a good segue. So I've never sold software. Maybe that's obvious. But when we think about Q1, like, what is the disruption that worried you or could worry you?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, the biggest change is the new role in this product specialist role. And you think about the teams and the different roles and the responsibilities of the different team members. Introducing something, a role that's new, I think is the biggest thing that the organization and the teams have to get used to. And not just get used to thinking about how they work with each other, but how that shows up to our customers. And I think that's the biggest thing that we're thinking about. Now, so far, the feedback from our customers has been really good. And so there's some good bright spots there, but I think that's the biggest change that we're seeing. The changes around the general manager, the changes around the actual more purview and control that they have in directing their resources, that has actually been very well received. There's definitely continued to be a learning curve in terms of how to deploy and wield that newfound responsibility. But I think the product specialist one is the biggest one that I think.
Okay.
I'm thinking about.
So a part of some of these go-to-market changes, at the Analyst Day, you mentioned, you know, tweaking pricing and packaging.
Yeah.
A little bit. So, you know, I've covered software for a while. Most company has suites, right?
Sweets?
Suites or like.
Oh, sweets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Procore doesn't have that. So I guess why doesn't Procore have suites, and like, where does that evolve in kind of the pricing and packaging opportunity?
It's interesting you asked that question because one of the main things, the main thing that we're doing in terms of pricing and packaging is more around packaging. We're not actually changing our pricing structure or anything like that. If you think about what we have done historically, we've essentially sold 12 to 13 products a la carte. And when you approach a big portion of our existing and new customers who aren't as used to buying software, that can become something that is unwieldy and can be something that becomes confusing. So one of the things we're starting to test now is, I use your term, suites. Good, better, best. And the intent of that is to, one, make sure that we simplify the understanding by our customers of what the value of Procore is and how that should progress. And it also takes a lot of the friction in terms of how our go-to-market organization engages our customers. And what that does is it gives our customers a roadmap of how they should evolve over time, taking away some of the complications around these a la carte sales. But we're testing those right now. And we, over the last couple of years, a couple of years ago, we did a portion of that. We did that approach in the down market in SMB, and it actually worked really well. And so we're moving to a place where we're going to try and see the right approach for that type of model throughout the different segments and stakeholders.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. And then with all these go-to-market changes, I guess, how are we going to measure success?
At the end of the day, you're going to measure success. We're going to measure success based on bookings, revenue, as well as margin. But I think what you're probably asking me is internally, what am I looking at? And I've talked about this before, but internally, particularly now and through the first part of the year, really looking at the pipeline that's coming through the funnel. One aspect of that is the magnitude of that. Are we generating enough pipeline? But I think probably more important, there's a 2A and 2B here, is the velocity by which the pipeline is moving through that funnel into a closed bookings deal. And that velocity 2B on that one is really looking at the consistency of that. So consistency tells me that systematically something is working, versus something that's a little bit more ad hoc or random. And when you take that even further, you look at starting to look at consistency in how our field organization is attaining their bookings, whether it's random or whether it's something that's much more of a normal distribution. You're never going to get to a normal distribution perfectly, but I'm looking for something that's more systematic in terms of those outcomes. That tells me things are working. At the end of the day, the productivity, meaning the bookings per rep per period, has to improve, which means that we're going to get top-line growth, and we're going to do it in a way that continues to expand our profitability.
Okay. Now, that's kind of a good segue to maybe some more financial-related topics.
Sure.
So one of the measures that a lot of people on the street look at is current CRPO.
Yep, CRPO.
You know, in Q4, it was 19%.
Correct.
But before we get all excited, you know, there was some pull forward. Right.
Yep. So early renewals, yeah.
Which was a couple points. So I guess when we think about 2025, you know, how should we think about trajectory or what can you say?
Well, first of all, it was more than a couple points, right? We had 19% CRPO growth. The renewals component of it, we said excluding that the CRPO growth in Q4 would have been in the mid-teens. And so even with that, though, we felt like we had a really strong Q4 from a bookings standpoint. When you think about CRPO, it's not a perfect metric, but it is something that's still something that is probably the right thing to look at. But remember, CRPO could be plus or minus a couple points from where the revenue growth is going to be. I'm not going to tell you what the shape of that's going to be. What I will tell you is that a couple of things. The booking strength that we saw in Q4 did not rob from Peter to pay Paul in Q1 from a pipeline standpoint. The pipeline still remains strong. But with that, though, you will see likely a little bit less incremental ads in Q1 because of this. But we've already accounted for that in our guidance and what we're trying to accomplish, particularly given some of the transitions and the changes that are happening in the go-to-market in Q1 and Q2.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So you still feel good about incremental dollar ads in Q1? Like, we shouldn't see that decline?
It'll add less.
Okay, sure. But you know, a good segue to maybe my next question that you kind of touched on, but like, why is CRPO going to be the best metric to measure your, call it, health of your business growth opportunity this year? I mean, it's going to be a little noisy, right? So you just talked about some pull forward, and then obviously it's going to create a really tough comp. So like, why shouldn't we be looking at like revenue growth?
You should, actually. So that's a great question. So the reason we talk about CRPO is actually for you all. It's an approximation of the revenue that we expect doing nothing else over the next 12 months, and it's also an approximation for bookings. But I think you answered the question for me, which is look at our revenue guide. We're guiding at 12%. We raised that from the early guide that we provided in the latter part of last year. In terms of that guide, we're confident and we have high confidence that we're going to beat it. We're going to get into a cadence this year where whatever we beat on revenue, we're going to flow through to the full year increase in the guide. And that's what we're trying to get into. That is still the best thing to look at.
Okay. So it's nice to talk about like some of the top line metrics, but the bottom line is like I think where you've been really trying to hammer home.
Mm-hmm.
So when we think about margin improvement, you know, going forward, like what are the sources of leverage and how should we kind of think about it?
I think we've been saying this all along, which is there's going to be leverage across all of the OpEx line items. So let me talk about that, though, in the context of 24 to 25. We've talked about we pulled forward a lot of the headcount hiring into 24 associated with the go-to-market changes, and that's true. And we've also done a lot of that in the product technology organization. We've also continued to look at our global footprint in terms of where our resources are located, particularly when we think about our aspirations to get more into our non-U.S. geos from a top-line perspective. When you put those pieces together, particularly the one where we started to pull forward a lot of that hiring, you're gonna see a very consistent expense profile throughout fiscal 2025. And when you start to couple that with the productivity improvements that we expect to get from the go-to-market organization, you're gonna see a much more regular cadence and improvement in terms of our margin throughout the year, versus fiscal 2024, that's a little bit more lumpy. Now, going forward past fiscal 2025 and fiscal 2026, we are not going to add the level, magnitude of resources that we added in fiscal 2024. We're going to get the productivity that we need to get from all these changes that we're making, and we're gonna get leverage from that. How that balances between top-line growth and margin growth, it's too early to tell right now for fiscal 2026. We gotta see kind of how these changes go. But we always come back to free cash flow per share, because I think optimizing and focusing on that metric naturally causes us and forces us to balance between the growth and top line and the margin.
Okay. Any questions from the audience? So I kind of want to switch topics a little bit.
Yeah.
If we think about your, you know, AI opportunities.
Yeah.
I think last year you had a Copilot kind of announcement, partnership. I guess, what's the feedback been? Well, what does that look like, first of all, like, from, like, a construction customer standpoint? And then, I guess, what's the feedback been like?
So what we have so far out there that's actually built into our platform is actually associated with Copilot. And the way to think about this is there's multiple stages. Copilot is more of a question and answer type of interaction from an AI perspective. That's available today on our platform, and we'll continue to evolve that, obviously. The next stage is, which we started to announce, which is not available, which is a lot of other software companies around agents and then Agent Studio. So agents would be something that carries out a task on your behalf or on our customer's behalf, and some of those are gonna come out of the box. And then the studios is going to be where our customers can customize those agents specifically for their own workflows, the nuances of their own workflows. And when you think about how that progresses, there's a tremendous amount of opportunity to really make our customers way more efficient in the entire ecosystem of construction. The stage that we're really in right now is trying to get this in the hands of our customers as quickly as possible, to get feedback, to fail fast. And I think that's what a lot of the other industry and software is doing right now. That's extremely important because, frankly, we don't know a lot of what we don't know right now in terms of the value that this can add. What we do know that it is going to add a value, we are going to monetize it, we just haven't figured out what those things are.
Maybe can you just give us an example, like what one of those agents would do?
Yeah. So we announced scheduling, for example, at Groundbreak. And if you think about what it takes for a human to manually adjust and get the information and trace through all the impacts of one scheduling change in a Gantt chart, think about an agent that could just do all of that for you, or maybe suggest it for you, just because, you know, folks are starting out. If one thing moves on the schedule, then I need to take delivery on something else in terms of materials a little bit later. I need to get folks on the job site and different trades on the job site at a different time interval. Those things were all being done manually. If something like an agent can do that for you, it adds a tremendous amount of efficiency to it, but also adds a tremendous amount of accuracy and allows you to manage the risk of some of those changes in your schedule, and that is huge, huge, huge value.
Okay. And let me guess, to, like, get the full value of the agent, you have to use all the Procore platform?
You should.
So maybe if we take this topic and spin it around on you as the CFO.
Yeah.
Are you using any agents from any other vendors?
You know what? In the G&A organization, and specifically in my organization, the CFO organization, we are evaluating a lot of these things, both from an internal development standpoint, but also from some of the vendors that we're using. But today, we're not at the tip of the spear in terms of using some of these things today. And so just like we're approaching our customers. I think a lot of our vendors that we use are also trying to get stuff into our hands to evaluate. And so we're certainly evaluating that both across the finance as well as the accounting side of things. But today we're still early in terms of putting those things in place.
Okay, that's fair.
If you have examples, by the way, I would love to hear them.
Of how I'm using agents?
No, about how other folks are using
them. Well, you're the first person I asked. So. I don't know, Trimble likes to talk about how they use agents all the time,
yeah.
So you have to ask them. Procore Pay, you know, it's a topic that you know we all you know always ask about. Really interesting opportunity. You always try to you know make it realistic though. So I guess how's that business going, and any updates there?
No real significant updates at all, actually, since the last time we spoke at our earnings call. We're happy where it's at. We got over 250 customers now. Remember, we are very deliberate about where we are targeting the initial customers for pay. You got to have project financials, you got to have invoicing, then we go say, hey, how about pay? That's a really natural progression, and the intent of that is to make sure in these early stages to get customers up and running and make sure that they're successful. Now, having said that, there's some learnings, right? We always talked about the long implementation timelines. The interest is there. The enthusiasm is there. When you think about that implementation timeline, we focused a lot on the GC implementation. One of the things that we learned is we also have to have an equal amount of focus on the SC implementation to fill out that entire ecosystem and that loop. And so that's what we're going through right now. But the enthusiasm is there. There's no shortage of interest in pay. And we're about where we thought we would be. But don't put these in your models in fiscal 25.
Sure, sure. I'll ask one more question,
yeah.
And then we'll get to my last question that
okay.
You've been waiting for. So I think you've dipped your toes in insurance and materials financing before. Like, pay is not fintech, but within fintech, you know, are there any other opportunities that make sense?
In specifically around things associated with PRA, Procore Risk Advisors, which we wound down, here's the way to think about it. It's less about insurance itself. It's more about how do we leverage this treasure trove of specific industry-specific data to help our customers manage risk in their business. And insurance was one vehicle to do that. And what we discovered was it was the wrong vehicle to do that. And so we continue to believe that this data set that we have is extremely valuable to our customers from a risk management standpoint. And we continue to explore things that can bring that value to our customers. Nothing to announce right now, but it's something that we continue to,
okay.
to explore.
And I usually like to wrap things up with a fun question.
Okay.
Jimmy Butler, how many seasons or games do you think it's going to take until he demands a trade?
I think the Warriors are going to go further in the playoffs than people think. And I think if we do well, he'll stay.
Okay,
how
cool. We'll leave it there. Thank you, Howard. Thank you, everyone. Have a good rest of the conference.
Thank you.